You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, KPFA in Berkeley.
This is KPFK in Los Angeles.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York.
Howdy. In Houston, this is listener-sponsored KPFT.
And you're hearing it on Pacifica Radio, WPFW in Washington.
Pacifica Radio. It's the oldest listener-sponsored radio in the United States, reaching from the San Francisco Bay Area and the metropolis of Los Angeles to the eastern cities of New York and Washington, D.C., and to the southwest city of Houston, Texas. The noble experiment began in 1949 in Berkeley, California, when KPFA first took to the airwaves, a new concept in broadcasting. It was called listener sponsorship, and was the brainchild of Lewis Hill, a radio broadcaster and a Quaker, who was intensely concerned with the strife between individuals and between nations in our modern society. He was aware that the arts can be a bridge of communication, and believed that radio could become the medium for expression and for exploration into the conflicts in society. With a hard-working staff of four and with $15,000 in the bank, KPFA FM was born April 15, 1949.
What was amazing at the height of the McCarthy era was the notion of such a station existing anywhere. Of course, I have a personal, a very serious theory about it, and that is that the fact that it existed in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area was the only place in the country where the New Deal alliance had not been smashed by red baiting. San Francisco had this peculiar history, which, in my mind, is it represents a combination of it's having been the last outpost of American frontier democracy, which to me has meaning.
One may be right in saying the San Francisco area is a unique spot on the globe, just as in the 1950s, Pacifica was a unique spot on the radio dial.
There you are, back again, I see. Well, welcome, come in, come in. You'll be overjoyed at the tale I have for you tonight.
Pacifica wanted to be something different from the rest of the radio industry, an industry which, in addition to competing with the television explosion, had rapidly become a medium for selling products.
N-A-B-I-S-C-O, Nabisco is the name to know. For a breakfast you can't beat, try Nabisco shredded wheat.
It was discovered that radio, and the media in general, could also be used to sell ideas and to sell wars.
The 1950s saw the beginnings of a war against a new American enemy, communism, both abroad and at home.
There are things you don't learn from school, from reading, but you must see. This is part of my background. It goes to make up the person that I really am. A progressive individual. Is this the reason they have given us only 3 more weeks to live? They tell me in many devious ways you can save your wife and yourself. Make a deal. Do what the government wants. Can I now deny all these truths I know? Can I deny the principles that are so much a part of me? This I can never do. I cannot live a lie. My entire life and philosophy negates this. And it is obvious I could never commit the crime I stand convicted of.
Americans watched with fear and horror the death of two people dubiously convicted of trading secrets with the enemy, the Rosenbergs.
Always remember that we were innocent and could not wrong our conscience. We press you close and kiss you with all our strength. Lovingly, Daddy and Mommy, Julie and Ethel.
Americans also watched with horror the witch hunts led by Senator Joe McCarthy and the countless investigations conducted by the House Committee on Un-American Activities. The broadcast industry, like the entertainment world as a whole, succumbed to the hysteria of the Cold War due to financial pressure. The Pacifica Foundation, too, was attacked and harassed because of its policy of free speech and for possible Communist Party affiliations.
Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Communist Party?
William Mandel, KPFA programmer at the 1960 HUAC hearings in San Francisco.
Honorable beaters of children and sadists uniformed and in plain clothes. Distinguished Dixiecrat wearing the clothing of a gentleman. Eminent Republican who opposes an accommodation with the one country with which we must live at peace in order for us all and our children to survive. My boy of 15 left this room a few minutes ago in sound health and not jailed, solely because I asked him to be in here to learn something about the procedures of the United States government and one of its committees. Had he been outside, where son of a friend of mine had his head split by these goons operating under your orders, my boy today might have paid the penalty of permanent injury or a police record for desiring to come here and hear how this committee operates. If you think that I am going to cooperate with this collection of Judases, of men who sit there in violation of the United States Constitution, if you think I'll cooperate with you in any way, you are insane. This body is improperly constituted. It is a kangaroo court. It does not have my respect. It has my utmost contempt.
It was not illegal to be a member of the Communist Party in the 1950s, just as it was not illegal to talk about marijuana on the radio. But it could get you into trouble. And if you're a radio station that is committed to airing all points of view, no matter how controversial, then you might have more than your fair share of difficulties with the government, the FCC, and the public. In June of 1954, the following broadcast was heard on KPFA and caused the first in a series of tests of the nation's commitment to free speech and First Amendment rights.
Yeah, well, I'll call myself Red. I'm 34 years old. I've been a viper, which is to say that I've been smoking marijuana since the summer that I turned 17. I'm 34. During the time that I have smoked marijuana, I have become convinced that the only problem, really, faced with the American people are faced with concerning marijuana is that you got a good thing here, and if you get caught using it, you'll get put in jail.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show. If you get ready now, go ahead, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe.
While the Cold War was waging, not only were rock and rollers rocking, but a beat scene was developing. Jazz was also happening, and at Pacifica Radio, new compositions of contemporary serious music were provided a public outlet for live radio premieres.
Artistic integrity and freedom of expression were key principles upon which Pacifica was founded. At a time when dozens in the entertainment field were being blacklisted, listener-sponsored radio continued to open its microphones to artists, musicians, and poets, blacklisted or not.
This is Peter Seeger speaking, wishing Paul Robeson birthday greetings. Paul Robeson, I think in my own opinion, was one of the greatest voices, one of the greatest Americans I've ever known in my life. And also, about the most blacklisted performer I ever knew in my whole experience. Many, many years from now, people will still hear that extraordinary and most noble voice singing songs that I don't think Americans will ever want to forget.
Alive as you and me, says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
Because of my political views, which I certainly did not expect in a democracy, I've been prevented from exercising my craft. On the other hand, I have never separated my work as an artist from my work as a human being. I've always put it even more strongly that, to me, my art is always a weapon. It's got to be good art.
Many well-known and lesser-known poets of the country have read live from Pacifica Studios, among them Robert Frost, Allen Ginsberg, William Carlos Williams, Dylan Thomas, Langston Hughes, Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
A poet can be an orator. He can use a soapbox style to make himself heard over the static. But try to mount the box without the soap. The poet must be the real barbarian, descending on society, moving continually downward, not upward, in it, and saying what he hears with his ear to the ground.
In 1959, a program of Ferlinghetti reading his poetry was aired on KPFA, and Pacifica was hit with its first obscenity complaint. There was much confusion among Pacifica personnel as to what their stand on obscenity should be. It wasn't until 1963, however, that it became necessary to take a stand.
The risks sometimes taken by the Pacifica staff and volunteers might seem foolish to some. However, there have been many who have appreciated such efforts, most importantly, the listeners and subscribers. Recognition was also received from those in the journalism and communications field. KPFA was awarded the George Foster Peabody Award for Public Service, radio's highest honor, for its courageous venture into the lightly trafficked field of thoughtful broadcasting, and for its demonstration that mature entertainment plus ideas constitute public service broadcasting at its best. Despite the financial hardships of voluntary listener-sponsored radio, Pacifica managed to expand its operations to Los Angeles, and KPFK was born in 1959. And in 1960, millionaire philanthropist Louis Schweitzer decided to give his radio station away. Pacifica was now three stations strong, with WBAI in New York added to the group.
As the Cold War continued to grow to dangerous levels, the need for free radio was greater than ever.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island.
World peace was being threatened by what was called the Cuba crisis, and Pacifica Radio felt the need to inform the American public and presented a panel discussion a few days following President Kennedy's statement. It was around the same time that WBAI broadcast the first sustained attack on the FBI and its notorious director, J. Edgar Hoover, ever to be presented on American television or radio. Both the risky interview with former special agent Jack Levine and the Cuba crisis program aired on KPFA were an irritation to the government. It seems no accident that a few months later, the Pacifica Foundation received subpoenas to appear before SISS, the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee.
The press was favorable towards the Pacifica stations, and subscriptions were at an all-time high. But the hours and money spent on defending the network in the SISS investigations took its toll. And to complicate the matter, Pacifica's broadcast licenses were up for renewal. The old charges of obscenity violations and the new charges of communist affiliations caused a fillet by the FCC in the renewal of those licenses. The commission received strong criticism from all sides regarding the Pacifica case, criticism like the following statement from Laurent France of The Nation.
The dreary wasteland of trash and trivia that pervades much of commercial broadcasting, both in radio and television, can scarcely have escaped the FCC's attention. If the present commission is concerned about this situation, one might think it would be concerned with preserving one of the few creative voices in radio, instead of embarking on a course that's likely to silence that voice. And in view of the chorus of received opinion throughout most of the mass media, one would think that the world's most powerful country could afford to risk allowing a few small dissenting voices to be heard over the air in Berkeley, Los Angeles, and New York.
In January of 1964, the Federal Communications Commission granted the licenses to KPFK and WBAI, a decision which represented, according to a New York Times editorial, a clear victory for freedom of the airwaves. The early 60s saw the beginning of a social and political awakening in the United States. In Berkeley, home of KPFA, the free speech movement was born and left its impact on a generation that was about to make itself heard.
On October 1st and 2nd, up to 6,000 students were sitting in at the administration building of the University of California and demonstrating around a trapped police car in protest of restrictions of their constitutional freedoms. Some of the speakers you are about to hear have not slept for 3 days. Their voices are cracked, their emotions are shaken. This is their story, taped live at the demonstrations.
I say you as people, as young people, who have the strength and the heart and the intelligence and the guts to do whatever you please. And if you have the strength here, which you have, to stand to the administration and say, we want free speech on campus, you can have through the rest of your lives the strength to stand up whenever you say, whenever you see something you don't like, you don't believe in segregation, or to say to the government, I don't believe in war. And you really have to do it. The country is yours. The country is yours, and if you want it, you're going to have to fight for it, because it might not be around for that long.
And along with white college students, angry black people refused to remain silent, saying that the back of the bus and the overcrowded, rat-infested inner-city ghetto was no longer acceptable.
What is looked upon as an American dream for white people has long been an American nightmare for black people.
We should be peaceful. We should be law-abiding. But the time has come for the American Negro to fight back in self-defense whenever and wherever he is being unjustly and unlawfully attacked. Now, if the government thinks that I'm wrong for saying this, then the government should start doing its job.
You don't have a peaceful revolution. You don't have a turn-the-other-cheek revolution. There's no such thing as a nonviolent revolution.
Friend of mine, he was a friend of mine. Never had enough money to pay his fine, and he was a friend of mine.
While Americans were talking about changing things in the country, Pacifica helped to make those voices heard. And at the same time, a new style of radio was being developed, something called freeform radio. WBAI's Bob Fass was the first freeform radio artist.
You want to take some more calls?
Oh, I don't know. That doesn't matter to me. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it.
Bob Fass is interviewing Bob Dylan
today.
Yeah.
We can't play. I just heard it, and we can't play it on the air.
Oh, yeah. It's too
bad. Not because it's dirty or anything like that, but it isn't released yet. But I heard it, and I memorized it, and I'll sing it. I'll sing it.
You would.
Well, it's not copyrighted. WBAI.
All the while, Pacifica was making a small revolution in the field of classical or serious music when it opened its airwaves to avant-garde composers such as John Cage, Edgard Varese, Charles Ives, Lou Harrison, whose music was frequently featured at California's internationally renowned Cabrillo Music Festival. Culturally and politically, Pacifica stations were always a step ahead of the rest of the American electronic media. When the American press reiterated the official government line on Vietnam and what we were doing there, Pacifica reporters were saying something different.
The city of Wei and the 1st Battalion of the 5th Marines have something in common. They are both being destroyed, piece by piece, house by house, man by man. Much of the city lies in rubble now, and ground and naval artillery, tanks, mortars, and rockets continue to blast at what remains. As the battle for the Imperial Walled City goes into its 21st day, one of the bitterest battles of the Vietnam War. To the reporters there, the reality we found was in shocking contrast to the official pronouncements on the situation offered in Saigon and Washington. Officially, it seems the Battle of Hue is now only a mopping up exercise. 4 days ago in Saigon, I was invited to attend a victory celebration of an Arvin paratroop battalion that had just returned from Hue. All over but the mopping up. Lyndon Johnson on the 6th of February compared the situation to insecurity in Detroit and Washington, where any small group of people can make trouble for a little while. The reality is very different. As one Marine sergeant put it,
WBAI's Dale Miner in Vietnam.
I'd hate to see a real battle.
They came for the pride and for the glory of the Western man. They came with swords and guns and Bibles waving in their hands. Like a storm they took command. Like the locusts they covered the land. Like so many others who came to Vietnam.
When reporting the growing opposition to U.S. involvement in Vietnam was effectively discouraged in most of the media, KPFA, KPFK, and WBAI presented Vietnam Day, a radio teach-in, in April of 1965. KPFA's manager at the time reported that meetings at colleges throughout the signal area used KPFA broadcasts as the focus for their discussions.
They burned and bombed and raped and rifled towns. They told the people that their culture was wrong. They called them Viet Cong.
Those against the war took to the streets. They filled coliseums. They shut down colleges and universities. They were physically abused and they sometimes went to jail. They were angry and they were determined.
Behind the guns of the Viet Minh, one people from Saigon to Hanoi, reunifying what could not be destroyed. Like the songs that Vietnam will win.
There's a pushing match between troops, marshals, people being hit, things being thrown from the crowd.
Fight!
rocks being thrown from the crowd. Members of the crowd shouting Sieg Heil. Several military policemen have lost their hats.
They cried, "Bring the war home," and it was brought home. There were even injuries and a few deaths. People's Park, Berkeley, California.
110 people were shot by cops in Berkeley yesterday. They were protesting Haines' decision to substitute a sterile soccer field surrounded by an 8-foot fence for their creative efforts to build a place of pleasure and enjoyment out of what had been a neglected mudhole. Why? Why did they risk murdering people over that small piece of land? Because they were unwilling to put the decision-making power about what to do with the park in the hands of the public. Instead, in the name of that public, they declared war on the people.
But it wasn't only anger that young people were feeling. There was also something else in the air, a feeling called love, and a sweet-smelling weed called marijuana. It was a time when the flower children, or hippies, the peaceniks, and the revolutionaries all had something in common. At about the same time, the civil rights movement was evolving into a black power movement. With the deaths of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney in Mississippi, and later the gradual attempt to exterminate leaders of the Black Panther Party, the movement, which had a southern religious and student base, was turning into a militant revolutionary force.
And in California, farm workers began organizing themselves into a union under the leadership of Cesar Chavez. Pacifica Radio again was covering a people's struggle long before the commercial media recognized its importance. The need for free speech radio was especially great during the 60s, and Pacifica's role was unique in several ways. William Mandel.
In the 60s, wherever the action was, KPFA was there, and was there not because we were so smart or so good, but because we were trusted, and because we drew our people, we drew our personnel from those very movements. Therefore, at the time of People's Park, 100 people shot in one day, one person killed, a great deal of justified paranoia. Nonetheless, KPFA could go in and record things that no one else would be allowed to record, because we were trusted.
The presidency of LBJ brought us the era of the credibility gap. Social unrest and anger towards the war was at its peak, and government and press censorship was even tighter. In 1967, CBS decided to end its 17-year blacklisting of folk singer Pete Seeger. Seeger was planning to sing Waist Deep in the Big Muddy, a song critical of Lyndon Johnson, based on an episode in which some Marine trainees had died by drowning. Seeger was censored again, as CBS deleted the song just prior to telecast.
But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
The whole world was watching Chicago during the Democratic Convention. They were also watching the burning of a bank in Isla Vista, California, and countless demonstrations held in every major American city.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
also watching while American students were shot and killed, first at Kent State and then at Jackson.
It could have been me, but instead it was you. So I'll keep doing the work you were doing as if I were to. I'll be a student of life, a singer of songs, a farmer of food, and a writer of wrongs.
KPFK's Watergate Watch continues.
I had no prior knowledge of the Watergate break-in. I neither took part in nor knew about any of the subsequent cover-up activities. I neither authorized nor encouraged subordinates to engage in illegal or improper campaign tactics.
The reign of Richard Nixon brought not only increased distrust in government, but renewed attacks on the media. Through the FBI and other law enforcement agencies, the rights of the press were being thwarted, and alternative news sources were especially singled out. Pacifica found itself embroiled in several news source protection cases from 1971 through 1975. On various occasions, the FBI requested the original communiques KPFK had received from the Weather Underground, the Symbionese Liberation Army, and the New World Liberation Front.
Greetings to the people. This is Tanya. I died in that fire on 54th Street, but out of the ashes I was reborn, death to the fascist insect that preys upon the life of the people.
They intimidated and they harassed and went so far as to jail station manager Will Lewis. They also conducted an eight-hour search of the KPFK facilities, which was broadcast live in Los Angeles.
It's a hell of a note that in order to test the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, that you have to go to jail first.
General Manager Will Lewis of radio station KPFK was remanded to the custody of the federal marshal today by Judge Arnold Houck.
If you were listening October 10th, 1974, you heard the police search of KPFK.
My understanding is they are going to take pictures both before they search and after they search.
Lieutenant Hines?
Yes.
Could you tell us what...
Police photographer now taking a picture down the length of the room.
We're going to conduct a search, and as such, we're going to direct our attentions to the search. We're not really in a position to give you information.
Covering the room systematically in several shots.
If you're doing the reporting that you want, I would appreciate it if you don't interview any of the officers while they're attempting to conduct the search. We'd like to leave as soon as possible and get it done as...
Certain amount of tension here in the newsroom, since we're not used to the normal course of our day's work to being searched by the LAPD.
Pacifica stations also experienced more violent forms of harassment from the outside. KPFT in Houston, which took Pacifica to a fourth metropolitan area in 1970, was bombed off the air. Twice. According to the FCC, KPFT was the first station to be blown up in the history of U.S. radio broadcasting.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
This is Don Forche in Berkeley. I'm talking on the telephone with Larry Lee, general manager of KPFT in Houston. Larry, we heard last night that your transmitter was blown up. Maybe for those of our listeners who didn't get that story, you could run down on exactly when and how it happened.
Yeah, at 11 o'clock Central Time last night, Arlo Guthrie was on record singing Alice's Restaurant. Just as he reached the part where he was shouting, "Kill, kill the Army psychiatrist," our transmitter got killed, blown up by what now appears to be 15 sticks of dynamite. I guess that fighting mad is the way that you describe the attitude around the station today. Everybody's turning the energies released by that explosion into hard work. The volunteers are kind of rededicating themselves to the project. They feel that what happened last night makes it more important than ever that we not only survive, but that we come back strong and tell the increased audience that the explosion results in some of what's going on in this rather strange, large city in the South.
And as KPFT struggled along under great odds, WPFW in Washington, D.C., after a series of delays, finally came to be in March of 1977. And meanwhile, the early 70s saw the U.S. government take on some very loud opponents of the system. Pentagon Papers defendants Daniel Ellsberg and Anthony Russo and Communist Party member Angela Davis were tried and acquitted. Another victory for freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech, specifically indecency, became an issue again for Pacifica when in 1973 WBAI in New York aired a performance by comedian George Carlin. It was the seven dirty words you can't say on television.
Yeah, there are 400,000 words in the English language, and there are seven of them you can't say on television. What a ratio that is. 399,993 to 7. They must really be bad. They'd have to be outrageous.
The FCC didn't want them said on the radio either.
Critics of U.S. foreign policy had a new focus in the 70s. The involvement of the CIA and other U.S. governmental agencies in the affairs of third world countries. Chile became a glaring example of such involvement.
A brutal military dictatorship has replaced a democratically elected civilian government in Chile. All political parties have now been banned. The Congress has been shut down. The press is highly censored. Elections have been put off indefinitely, and thousands have been jailed, tortured, and killed. The 1970 activities were not the first U.S. actions in Chile. It was on September 11, 1973, that the democratically elected popular government of Salvador Allende was overthrown by a four-man military junta.
In these difficult moments for Chile, the working class must demonstrate its willingness to fight as well as its sense of responsibility.
Salvador Allende, broadcast over Pacifica
Radio. It must
not
lose faith and should not allow itself to be massacred. But it must be more united than ever and must demonstrate to all that it is the major force behind the Chilean revolution.
While Native Americans, Latinos, Asians, and blacks were organizing and demanding their long overdue rights, women were mobilizing and raising consciousness about sexism in our society.
Pacifica internally became a battleground on which third world people took a stand for fair representation. The result of this struggle for the realignment of power was a strike. In 1974, the staff of KPFA made moves toward a more collective decision-making process. In San Francisco, the struggle of the International Hotel became a symbol of the conflict between poor people and big business. The struggle came forth as the likely opportunity for the Third World Bureau in Oakland to test and develop its journalistic style. The Bureau's coverage established its presence as a viable source of news and information in the San Francisco Bay Area.
That's some of Pacifica's history. But what about the present and the future? News, one of the truly important facets of our service, has been greatly improved by the development of the Pacifica News Bureau in Washington, D.C. Located between the Capitol and the White House, we are now in a better position to keep a watchful eye on the workings of the government. And for those who are too far away to get these programs firsthand, there is PPS, the Pacifica Program Service. Based in Los Angeles, PPS distributes Pacifica programs to schools and libraries throughout the country, and the 70 community and university radio stations in the U.S. and overseas. In early 1979, the Pacifica Foundation stations will receive equipment from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, enabling them to receive programming via satellite. With the continued support of its listeners, the subscribers, one day this struggling group of radio stations called Pacifica could become the most effective radio network in the world.
Larry Binsky,
I think, like most people who worked in Pacifica stations, I found that the stations try to do so much, try to do things that other radio stations, commercial or non-commercial, won't even touch. And yet, because the stations are manned largely by idealists, many of the things that people try to do don't get done. These lead to frustrations. But the golden moments of broadcasting that a station like KPFA and the other Pacifica stations have produced are really unrivaled in other places, and they really make the whole experience worthwhile. There are people who've gone through these stations who have done absolutely magnificent things. Many of us have gone on to careers in commercial broadcasting. Other people have given up entirely. But whatever your life has been after you've worked in a Pacifica station, you're never the same person again.
William Mandel.
Essentially, the retreat into oneself. Or, for example, the reaction that I get occasionally from lecture audiences nowadays. Why bother thinking about someone else? That was not the mood 10 years ago. We're in this conservative period, that is so, and so once again, although history never quite repeats itself, there is a stronghold for people's right to say whatever they think, people's right to advocate ideas that they really believe will help the country out of its present hole. This is the freest radio in the world.
This presentation was made possible by the many hundreds who have played in the Pacifica FM band. Their hard work and dedication will not be forgotten.